First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Sometimes it was a hard night for him to get on time. You know, he's busy running that business at Barack Obama before him. So he had a hard time showing up on sometimes. But hopefully he'll be with us in a minute. For you guys that are in the listening queue, please hit that number one on your dial pad as always. We will try to get you on air as soon as possible. For all other listeners of the show, the call-in numbers are 858-683-1326. Or 502-805-0334. I tell you, we've always got a lot going on. It never ceases to amaze me. But every now and then we run across the dumb story of the day. We continually complain today that they don't have freedom in America. And let me tell you, I found a dumb story of the day today to tell you how bad it is in other places. Coming out of Moscow, the Associated Press is reporting today that Russia is now going to have a trade ban on lacy lingerie. Yeah, you got that right. Apparently, they're going to outlaw any underwear containing less than 6% cotton from being imported, made, or sold in Russia, Belarus, and Kazakhstan. Now, here's the thing, guys, because you know, Russia, the Soviet, during the Soviet era and the big Cold War and all that stuff, the only thing women were allowed to wear was cotton underwear. They weren't allowed to wear anything, actually any lingerie or anything else. So this was really funny, but, you know, this ban was first outlined in 2010. And apparently they're going to push it this year. And it's going to cost a hell of a lot of money. According to the Russian Textile Businesses Union, more than $4 billion worth of underwear is sold in Russia annually, 80% of which are actually foreign made. I just thought that was one of the dumb stories of the day. We think we got it bad. How are you, Mr. Martin?
All right, Mr. Springton. Well, you know, when you outlaw underwear, you know, 100% synthetic underwear, only outlaws will have 100% synthetic underwear.
Mob boss sitting around in feminine and lacy panties laughing at the rest of the world. I just saw that story and I was like, you know, this is just dumb enough to make radio, so let's get radio. I can't imagine, you know, how bad it can be in society anywhere. And, you know, we don't think about that in other countries, but I can't imagine how bad it could be where they're going to tell you exactly what underwear you're going to wear. You know, that's military style, so every season is a military guy. It was just hilarious to me.
Yeah.
But
well, you know, especially when you consider the human trafficking and the Russian mob is involved in so much, you know, and prostitution and everything else. And yeah, they're going to worry about underwear. You know, and I'm surprised they would even give a damn, because Russia is a net exporter of oil. So, you know, if they're exporting oil, then people are taking oil byproducts and making underwear out of them.
Maybe there was a print, man. Somewhere along the line, there was something meant to determine what soiling your underwear meant. Saw oil and thought they were going to lose something. I don't know. Could have been a typo. But, yeah, it is interesting, you know, and it's going to clear 90% of the shelves, which, okay, I guess we get that. But really, I mean, how are you really going to enforce this ban in the black market? Are you going to have it pass through an airport scanner like the TSA uses here and see if they figure out what kind of underwear you have on? I mean, it's just
the matter is the Russian mob probably wants it, because now they can traffic in whatever, Macy's underwear or Victoria's Secret, you know, whatever underwear they can. That's just another market for organized crime. They'll be able to smuggle in. They won't have any trouble smuggling in contraband undergarments. So, yeah. Business opportunity, baby.
I'm telling you, you know, last week we were talking about penis enlargement. I talked about women's underwear. I don't know how we get these stories or where they go. I thought it was pretty humorous. But we do have in Louisville and nation beyond, you know, a lot of things to cover tonight. Greater Louisville, Inc., GLI, you know, gag me when you see me, because I can't stand these people. They're a joke. GLI changed leadership last night. CEO Craig Richard, is now the administrative leave 3 weeks ago. And he finally gave a resignation Saturday. We don't have all the details on it, but apparently he is a PLI vice president.
Okay, I'm familiar with the story, but you are popping in and out all over the place. I can't understand what you're getting at.
Now let's try this again. Is that any better?
No.
We are already working with BPR. I'm working with ATT. I'm working with everybody in the world. Nobody seems to know what's going on with this. Hopefully it'll get better as the night goes on. I'm hoping I'm not popping too much right now. What's interesting to me with GLI, can you hear me okay now, Ed?
Now it's okay, yeah.
Wow, that's weird. It just comes and goes. What's really interesting with this GLI story is GLI has always been under criticism, because it's nothing more than a front for the Democratic Mafia here in the world, in my opinion, all right? But, you know, President Jim King, Metro President Jim King, has been griping about the lines of communication between GLI and the Metro Council. So, you know, now this guy, Craig Richard, goes on paid administrative leave 3 weeks ago and is forced out. You know, this doesn't sound to me like a place that's running on its own, like it should be. How about you?
Never had much use for GLI, even as a business person. You know, I'm always a little leery when you have a quasi-governmental business advocacy group. It's too much room for selectiveness and political influence. And, you know, big picture, all I can say is, you know, we got the reports the other day that Louisville is the eighth most taxed city in America. So I'm thinking GOI is not doing a very good job. How about you?
Well, that's the problem. And now they want this 1% tax increase that they can use any way they want to and all this other stuff. I mean, we pay enough. It's very interesting as well. The GOI has been set up. Insiders taking care of the insiders. And, you know, they say that it is the Metro Chamber of Commerce, which it's not. It's an independent organization. So because they are independent of Metro Council, I'm having a real problem understanding how Metro Council should have anything to do with influencing GOI as a corporation. So it's going to be interesting to look forward. Can't wait to get the real inside story on what happened to its director. In the meantime, moving on just a little bit, Courier Journal reported a story today.
Hello, I got nothing.
You got nothing?
Whatever you were saying the last 10 seconds, I got nothing.
Let's try this again. Are we there yet?
I hear you say you're there yet, but everything up to that, no.
All right. Well, I'm getting a lot of wind noise from your phone, too, and I don't know why that is either. All right.
I'm outside trying to get better reception. thinking maybe it's me.
I got you. Well, Charles Booker, slave employee, he appeared online, Democrat Lundigan Grimes campaign, was fired yesterday violating a staff policy against partisan political activity. What that essentially means is that Booker allowed himself to be used in this video with Allison Lundigan Grimes, but because he's an employee of the Legislative Research Commission, he wasn't allowed to do that, so he was terminated for it. I got a problem with that, and I tell you what the problem is. It's not really that I have a problem with Booker being partisan political activity, but let's be real clear here. Every person who works with that on government is a partisan activity person. How many times have we been told about people like Steve Beshear or his people, or Jerry Abramson and his people, going around to everybody in their offices and demanding that they contribute to a certain candidate's fund to reelect them so that they can keep their job? Why is that terminated?
Well, I mean, you know, rules are rules. He got fired. I got to wonder. Sometimes it is what my accountant refers to a lot of stuff as stupid taxes. And in his case, you're in the Legislative Research Commission. You know the rules. There's 4 million other people in the state that could have done the photo op, but you decided it had to be you. So that's the stupid tax you're going to pay. You're gone. But, yeah, I mean, we hear it all the time in Louisville, whether it's, you know, going back to Irv Mays or anybody like that. all the employees in the office, you know, were asked for a donation. They give it. And granted, they might give it of their own free will if they, you know, they enjoy working for them, you know, whoever the candidate is. But, yeah, it's just the monolithic nature of it, the fact that it's always one-sided. You never hear a story or hear anything about, you know, somebody working in the prosecutor's office or working in the mayor's office and donating to the other guy. It never happens that way. So, I mean, it's a very... They've got it sewed up pretty good, and maybe that's why they don't get burned that often. But, you know, it does seem a little bit of a double standard when a guy simply shows up for a picture, which he shouldn't have done, and which they could have found anybody else to do it. He gets terminated, but, yeah, and when then people go around strong-arming or, you know, wink-wink, nod-nod, if you know what's good for you kind of fundraising, in political offices from political employees, yeah, and a double standard.
Well, see how they get, and it's actually what's really even more fascinating is Jonathan Hurst. He's the guy who is running the campaign, the senior advisor. He calls this an appalling act of retaliation by Mishmaw allies in the Senate Republican majority. Now, how can he blame this on Mitch McConnell?
You know, it's kind of like blame George Bush. It's basically, you know, for now, as far as polling information goes, it's a two-person race. So, I mean, everything's going to be blamed on Mitch. They're going to blame the snow on Mitch. And they're going to turn around and they're going to blame the mud on Mitch after the snow melts. And it's and the same thing for Mitch to Allison. It's, you know, I sometimes during campaign season, it just never occurs to me just how powerful our candidates are. I mean, they affect the temperature and the fact that I'm happy or not. It's just, wow. But, yeah, it's just, they're going to blame Mitch because that's what you do. It's the lazy, polarizing way to do it. And, you know, if something bad happens, well, Mitch did it. I don't give a damn what it is. It's,
well, and that really is because it seems to be the status quo for liberal Democrats in Kentucky. Blame the other guy. Blame any Republican you can, whether it's sheriff or not. Blame the party at all costs. You know, anything and everything you can to quit accepting responsibility. Now, I'm not saying it's one-sided. Both sides
do. It's not, for sure, yeah.
Both sides do this, but in this particular case, I just thought it was dumb for Jonathan Hirst to sit here and try to actually make that argument, considering that the LRC personnel policy manual clearly, I mean, it emphasizes that you must be nonpartisan when you work for the LRC because you serve all 138 legislators. So that to me was just, it was really reaching. And the fact that this just goes to tell you about the liberal media too, because there was no reason for the liberal media like the Courier Journal to sit out there and put that statement out there and give this guy any play for it. It was just dumb.
No, and the fact is, you know, if you want to turn it around, and it should be turned around, somebody, a reporter, you know, God forbid in the state of Kentucky, a reporter actually used their brains while they're standing on their feet, they should have looked at it and said, okay, so you're saying Mitch is responsible for this? And he could have said, that's right. I'm pretty quick on my feet. I think I would have looked at him and said, so what you're saying is, had the Mitch McConnell people not done this, the Grimes would have been okay with this violation of LRC rules?
Thank you.
Is that what you're saying here, Camp?
And that's exactly it. The Grimes camp should have known those rules, considering that Ashton Lundgren Grimes is a state-elected employee, right?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, and so you would think that her office works with the LRC.
You know, Secretary of State, no less, you know, involved in certifying candidacies and everything. Yes.
Exactly. And also the Secretary of State, who knows when you're supposed to file your business filings and everything else, and still, to my knowledge, has not filed her own for last year or the year before. So, you know, what the heck?
The question from the My View Matters camp is, is the Grimes campaign therefore saying that this violation of LRC rules should be overlooked, or are you condoning the violation of the nonpartisan nature of the LRC? Is that what the Grimes campaign is saying now?
I believe it is. I believe it is. That's all they can do is double speak. You know, we do have some other things going on, though, Ed. We're having this whole health care debate here in Kentucky, especially with Steve Scheer and, you know, him putting together the Kentucky Next Out legislative approval that's still ongoing in the court system. David Adams has been leading that fight quite well. But, you know, now we've got a story today dealing with Kentucky One Health. Kentucky One Health is arguably the largest health system in Kentucky. They have about 15,000 employees in Kentucky and southern Indiana. They also have more than 200 locations. Those locations include a wide variety of hospitals, doctors, clinics, primary care centers, all kinds of stuff. But they are looking now at $218 million deficit next year, and now they're going to have to do a bunch of layoffs. And they're starting those layoffs immediately because according to a memo that the Courier Journal put out that they obtained from them, it says that the current system-wide staff reductions will generally be complete by the end of February, which is next week. So we look at this, And you have to ask yourself, because Kentucky One Health, you know, they've got $2.5 billion budget. These guys, you know, Kentucky One Health came about because of the merger between Jewish and St. Mary's. They brought in St. Joseph Health System of Lexington. You know, all these different things that they brought in that made them this big, mega company for healthcare. All of a sudden, they're running $218 million short with all of these people that can contribute to it. That tells me, and maybe I'm wrong, and maybe I'm being Jonathan Hurst here, but that tells me that Obamacare might have something to do with this. What about you?
Well, I have a lot of family, distant and immediate, in the healthcare industry. And I can tell you, it's not just Obamacare. It's just been getting worse and worse and worse as far as how many resources are spent on the clerical and the legal, and not being spent on the patient care. But anybody, it doesn't matter if you're talking to the little clinic people in the Kroger store or you're talking to a heart surgeon at Audubon or something. Doesn't matter. They're all going to tell you that the government, you know, Medicare, Medicaid doesn't pay squat, doesn't pay enough in a lot of cases. I've more than enough people will tell you that. GPs will especially tell you that. In hell, we're not making any money. The GPs in the small labs, they're not making any money. So it wouldn't surprise me in the least that you know, a company that's spread out real big, and it's if I'm not mistaken, it's a non-profit, being part of the Catholic health system and all. Yeah, they probably didn't run real fat margins to begin with, and you know, now that you got whatever, more people coming in either with no care or with subsidized care, and you know, there's deductibles now that aren't getting paid because, well, you know, people can't pay them. I'm sure there's a whole litany of reasons it's happening, but just based on the size of the organization, yeah, death by 1,000 paper cuts, man. It's, you start bleeding a little here, a little there, and if you're as big as they are, hey, pretty soon you're talking about billions. Absolutely.
Let's get real here, though, because this whole thing, Kentucky One Health, the largest health system in Kentucky, you know, was formed in 2012 because of the merger. So all of these financials, everything else in 2012, less than 2 years ago, folks, a year and a half ago, all right? All these financials we knew about, they've got a $2.5 billion budget. You know, the only drastic thing that has happened in the last year and a half that would cause them to have, you know, a $218 million deficit and now have to force all these layoffs, we were right, would be the lack of income to some degree. Or they're spending more, you know, it's like anything else, you're spending more than you're taking in. But why are they not taking in as much as they normally do? And I tell you, there's more to this, because here I'm going to give you guys an example that I really want to look at this. We're looking at a story about Amos McGrew. I'm staying with the Courier-Journal for this story too, folks, because this all ties in together from them, and I want to make sure, you know, that we keep everything together. But there's a kid by the name of Amos McGrew, a typical kid, frequent ear infections, had to have tubes inserted in his ears 2 years in a row, because they're only for a year when you're a small child growing up. You know, but he had 2 years in a row, he had two put in his ears. He had each one done. He had the tooth put in two different hospitals. Now, here's one of the things that changed. His mother, Crystal McGrew, because, you know, she figured that it would cost about the same for the tubes both times, because she had the same insurance coverage. There was no change in insurance, no change in doctors, and there were no complications in this simple 8-minute surgery either way. However, in 2012, the charges for Amos McGrew's tubes was $1,560. In 2013, when Amos went to Jewish instead of Kozer, that number jumped from $1,560 to $5,260. And nobody say why the bills were so different. So this is what we're talking about here. And, you know, what has happened in the last year and a half? Now all of a sudden, Jewish is getting $5,000 for something that Coles Air Children's Hospital got $1,500 for it. You know, and that's one of the things that we have to talk about when we talk about health care. So why is Kentucky One losing money? Is it because they're agreeing to a larger negotiated fee with Jewish than they are with Coles Air? And that's the case. Aren't they setting themselves up for that default? And then when you throw in the effects of Obamacare, and nobody's going to get paid squat, less than Medicare in most cases, and you're going to pay more out of your pocket, doesn't all that tie in together? So what's the real fundamental problem out there?
Well, I say there's a multitude of problems. You know, you're in network, you're out of network. How many out of network patients you get? How many Medicare? How many Medicaid? How many indigent? Whether you've priced it right or not. Of course, there's no transparency in pricing. So to me, that almost seems like, boy, if they undershot the mark on pricing, then, you know, some people deserve to get laid off, because it's not like you have to publish your prices. So it's not like you have to publish a price and hold it for a year. If you're not making money, you raise the price. But I say large, complicated it could be a regional thing. They could be making money in one region and not in the other. Or, I know some people in the healthcare sector, they'll tell you how much time they spend, how much time and resources the hospitals and the doctor's offices and the personnel and everything spend on, well, I guess you could say, non-billable bullshit. So it's possible that they're getting swamped with a bunch of non-billable, you know, just clerical paperwork, just trying to get this, that, and the other done. I know one of the Medicare things is now when hospitals have people come in, if there's any kind of government, they fill out a survey, and if they don't get like high marks on everything, you know, always, you know, where you're comfortable, always. I know if you don't get high marks, they prorate your payments from the government. So, yeah, that could be a big one too. If you're catering to some grumpy people who will never give you the highest mark, that could affect your billing, and that's the bitch of it all.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, she was with Anthem Insurance, but you know, her insurance had always been continued for all these years, all this other stuff. But what's really interesting to me, though, is you had to start with all these costs, because according to the same study or the same story, you know, if you have major joint replacement, for example, let's talk about a hip replacement. It's going to cost $89,000 at University of Louisville, $63,000 at any Norton Hospital, $42,000 at Jewish Hospital in St. Mary's, and $29,000 at Baptist Health. So when we look at this stuff, though, and that's the thing for me, this wide disparity. So what we've got is Jewish is holding out for X amount of dollars that they signed a contract with on their negotiated discounts. And these discounts aren't the same across the board. Now that these numbers are out there, I hope these hospitals kind of look at this. But I've given this example before, and I'll give it again. You know, for my doctor, an office visit at my doctor is $58. I believe that's what it is today. $58. The negotiated discount to my insurer, in this case Humana, is $35 for the office visit. I have a $30 copay. So Humana's on the hook for $5. Okay? So it's not like they can sit here and say that they're not making money. And what I'm looking at here is when I see this kind of disparity in the hospital cost, then the problem is, as always, it's a market reflection. It's not anything Obamacare or anybody else is going to do to change this. That's always been the case. So why do we have to suffer through Obamacare and these kind of things? And by the way, Ms. McGrew, the first time her son had tubes put in, cost her $239 out of pocket after her insurance kicked in. That's what she paid to Norton. This time she had to pay almost $1,300 to Jewish. Now, what does that do to a single mom? How much money does that leave for her child and their welfare?
Oh, absolutely. And that's one of the things. I'm not a big advocate of, you know, over-regulation, but and I'm not really even advocating regulation of hospital pricing, but, you know, and a friend of mine, Tony Cruz, who does a morning show, this is one of his big things that he gets on, and we get on it too, is that where's the transparency? I mean, if government was going to legislate anything, and I mean, if they were going to legislate anything about the healthcare industry, they should have legislated transparency. Hey, there should be published price lists. You should be able to go onto a computer website and put your surgery together like you're getting options on a car.
Sure. Why not?
You should. My God, you look at all the different makes of cars and everything. You can go to the bookstore, you can go online, and you can just get a damn blue book. You can basically cost out every freaking option on a car. You can do this. You can do this with housing. You can do this with insurance. Yeah, sometimes government kind of hems you in, but you can pick your maximums and minimums. It's just about everything on the planet in some form, you know, to some degree or another. You have transparency, and you have the ability to piece together what you want, except when it comes to health care.
You remember a show called Name That Tune from years ago? Some of our audience might not. But there was a show called Name That Tune on television, and what it was...
I hated that show, by the way.
People did. But it didn't last long.
Yeah, it was always a bunch of big band crap. And, you know, here I am 9 years old listening to the Monkees, and it's like, come on, man, play some of my music. Okay,
I bring it up for a reason, because here's why. In Name That Tune, what you did is you had the contestants argue with each other. I can name that tune and so many notes. Then the other contestant said, I can name that tune so many notes. And they go back and forth, and then somebody says, name that tune. Well, using the transparency example that you just used, I'm kind of looking at a different variation. Why isn't there, and maybe this is something I need to do, but why isn't there a central website that doctors can sign up for? So when a patient is told they need a hip replacement, for example, by their general practitioner, whoever's looking at them, they can go on to that website and say, okay, I'm looking for the lowest bid for this hip replacement. And, of course, you'll have the doctor's name, so you'll be able to go out and research the doctor before you make a decision on who you're going to go to. But let the doctors negotiate those themselves. Why not?
Yeah, not only that, but you think about it. If you go on any website anywhere, you can get a 1 to a 5-star rating. You can basically, we could rate doctors, you know, you suck, or this guy's great, you know, whatever.
Sure.
I mean, in this day and age, I'm with you. It ought to be out there. There ought to be some way to get out there and to read, whether it's GPs or just individuals, can sit there and, you know, plug in their insurance, plug in this, plug in that. And, you know, to some degree, I blame the insurance companies. They do it sometimes. You know, you hear stories about it. But they need to flat out put their foot down and say, look, this is, you got to stay in network. If not, this is what you're in for, and it's not on us. You know, this is insurance. Love it or leave it. And they need, you know, there just needs to be so much more information out there.
Well, that's the thing, and they've made it that way intentionally. We're going to take a quick break, folks. When we get back, we've got a lot more to get into. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Listen to the Ed Springer Show right here on the MVM Radio Network.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
502-805-0334. You guys on the list, you don't get that little number one or dial pad. We've still got time for a quick call if you want it in. But I tell you, Ed, you know, work to work is becoming a major issue in, throughout many states in the country, including Kentucky. Right-to-work legislation is something they've been trying to get here for a long time. I tell you what, it might be getting to the point where they're actually going to get it. Tennessee, yes, Tennessee. Volkswagen plant in Tennessee just failed to unionize. The UW went to the Volkswagen plant in Tennessee. They were trying to unionize this plant. And you're talking about a German plant, unions. The Germans wanted a union. But anyway, the UW did not win. They defeated on a 712-626 vote on Friday night against bringing the UAW in. What makes it interesting right now with everybody worried about wages, we're talking about minimum wage, all these other things, you know, is the union mindset done?
I don't think so. I think you know, in a lot of cases, unions, just like anything else, they go cyclical. I mean, there are good unions. I mean, look at how Ford has done with the union here in town. They get along pretty good, and they're making money hand over fist, both the company and the unions. But I think you know, sometimes the unions have to, you know, they have to sell themselves better, both to management and to the employees. And if anything, I would say the biggest black eye the unions got was GM, and then Delphi. You know, that whole mess to where, I'm sure that was part of the argument. It's like, oh yeah, well, you saw what happened to GM. You know, the only reason you got any pension, you know, if they have any pension at all, because the government stepped in. It's just, you gonna roll the dice with them? You gonna roll the dice with those guys? I mean, are you? You're making good money now. But I think unions just have to do, you know, they've got some rebuilding to do, because that was, if you know, and the people haven't forgotten it yet, when GM and Chrysler got slaughtered the way they did and they got gutted, you know, a lot of, you know, that had to do with legacy costs and stuff. And the net results of some pretty unreasonable union negotiation in the 60s and 70s, and some pretty piss-poor management negotiating with the union in the 60s and 70s. A lot of the younger people, you know, they got a good job, everything's cool. They saw what almost happened with all those union pensions, devoid to government intervention and superseding, you know, contract law and bonds and stuff like that. I think that's what a lot of them are looking at. You know, the income's okay. Job security sure seems to be okay. They're individualists. They're saying, I'm making a good car. I'm earning my money. I don't really fear for my job. And they're probably looking at the pension, and they're probably like, hey, I'm in a non-union. I don't know what their pension looks like at the V-Week plant, but it's entirely possible that they have a say. You know, they've got, like a lot of other places, they can pick the investment plan they want, and they have a lot of individual autonomy over their pension, I'm guessing. And maybe they like that. Maybe they don't want to turn their pensions over to somebody else who almost lost it all.
Well, it's not just pensions, though. It's interesting because one of the comments that you'd made was back in the 50s and 60s, management was working with unions behind the scenes. And it's interesting you say that. An employee by the name of Mike Jarvis, who works at this Volkswagen plant in Chattanooga, you know, he said that was one of the big issues that were on everybody's mind. A lot of workers believed that Volkswagen and the union had already reached cost containment agreements and closed doors that were going to effectively cut their hourly pay rate. So they thought that it was interesting you brought that up. And another thing, too, is according to Jarvis, you know, he goes on to say that, hey, look, you know, this is Chattanooga, Tennessee. Having this man here is one of the greatest things that's ever happened to us. One of the problems that a lot of people had was, he said, look at every company that went bankrupt, shut down, or had an issue. The one common denominator of all of those companies was UAW. We don't need it. So there's a lot of people out there, and it's not just the UAW. We complain all the time about the UFCW, T seamstress, all of those things. So, yeah, I just thought it was interesting you brought that one point. Because that made a...
I also mentioned that the union, the GM and Chrysler fiasco, a lot of that was tied to them. And these younger workers in these newer plants, they saw that. And, when they hear the words legacy cost, they're thinking, holy crap, do we want to be handcuffed to that?
Well, yeah, it is interesting, and they're going fine without the union, so why even bother with it? And, I think that may be one thing that the unions have actually hurt themselves in. Because, thanks to a lot of the union movements, the 40-hour work week, those kind of things, and a lot of companies are scared to unionize because they know it's going to be a combative situation. I mean, Ford Motor Company is a combative situation every day, folks. Don't kid yourself. But when you look at all of this stuff in play, a lot of companies have actually wised up and found better ways to deal with their employees financially and in other ways, with any kind of a situation versus taking a risk on bringing a union that's going to hurt your business. So, or in their mind, it's going to hurt their business. I personally still believe in unions. I just don't believe in union leadership. There's a big difference there. But, and it looks like that's what they were doing in Chattanooga. I found it interesting that, they had turned it down, especially since Kentucky is actually looking at right to work behind the scenes. We're not making an issue publicly right now, folks, but trust me on this. And so I thought that was pretty interesting as well. I kind of want to hit a couple of national things here real quick, if we can. I'll tell you why. Caracas, Venezuela. I don't know if you've been paying attention to what's going on in Venezuela, but President Nicolas Maduro's government in Venezuela yesterday told our USC officials they had 48 hours to leave the country. Maduro is accusing the Obama administration of working with student protesters that are accused by Venezuela itself of inciting violence. And basically they said, you're going to get out or you're going to get hurt. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't think the Venezuelans have heard our president is a Nobel Peace Prize winner. Okay? I'm not going to say anything. I don't need to say anything more. Nobel Peace Prize, okay? We don't do that kind of stuff. He's great. He is a man of peace. Okay. Truth of the matter is, Venezuela has under Chavez has it really was a burr under a lot of people saddled in the United States. A lot of that crap he spewed. Real world, hey, no shit, Sherlock. Your government has been a thorn under our saddle. If you don't think there are American operatives in there stirring some crap up to make your life miserable, come on, dude. Payback's a bitch. You got it coming. Deal with it. And he is dealing with it. But, realistically, absolutely. We've got operatives on the ground in just about every country. Things start to get a little hot. They know what they're doing. And if it gets too hot, they'll get out. But truth of the matter is, the Venezuelans probably don't know who half of the real deep operatives are, and they're going to stay there.
Well, it's interesting. Foreign Minister Elias Jawa, he basically said, and he's going on record as saying, the U.S. consular officers, the senior officers, were trying to infiltrate the Venezuelan universities, and they were doing it. They were using it as a cover that they were doing visa outreach. I believe that, right? But additionally, Maduro has expelled American diplomats before. I mean, this isn't anything new, but why all of a sudden is it making the news, the national news? I don't know. Of course, the U.S. is
making all... I would say also a lot of it has to do with the fact that where technology is nowadays. Back in the day, if you wanted to brutally crush a revolution or some uprising or just some opposition, you could do it, and just like the killing fields of Pol Pot, nobody ever really heard or saw anything. Nowadays, you've got a bunch of diplomats moving around with some degree of diplomatic immunity. Whip that cell phone out and boom, and it's off, man. We're off to the races, and the world can see what you're doing. So I think it's a form of locking down. Absolutely.
Well, it's interesting, too. I tell you, A lot of journalists have already been harassed. They've been detained. Columbia's news channel was taken off of TV. They were taken off the cable television because they were actually covering these protests last week between a student demonstrator and the security forces. You know, three people killed, two students, one demonstrator. You know, and it was really interesting that this has been going on this long, and now we're going to tell the Americans to get out again. But, you know, I honestly do have a question, though. I mean, you know, Black Ops is Black Ops, man. I mean, it really is. So when you look at that, is it that far-fetched to see where, you know, we as Americans are putting our nose everywhere across this world and telling the whole world how to live and what to do? Would it really be that far-fetched to think that we have three diplomats over there working through this so-called visa outreach program trying to incite this revolution? Is it really that far-fetched to think?
Oh, hell no. I mean, like I say, that's low-level stuff. I mean, if you ever read up on the old KGB or any intelligence organization, idealistic students, you know, with open minds and, with dreams and stuff, that's fertile ground. Universities and schools have been, you know, whether they're going to recruit Lee Harvey Oswald or whomever, absolutely. The youth is where you go. You don't go hunting down old people, you know, on Social Security or something. They're done. So you seek those people out. So are we doing it? You know, of course our government's going to say no, and, you know, all our motives are purely honorable. But, you know, it would be folly to think that everybody else in the world pretty much does it, and we don't. Yeah, no.
Well, we all know better than that. And actually, we've got a few minutes left here, so I kind of want to go through something here. One of the things a lot of people have asked about, you know, we talk about Barack Obama by saying he's getting rich, you know, in office and things like that. So it kind of got me wondering about the richest presidents. And there's a big list of them. You guys can actually get this off the Huffington Post. When I was researching this, they came up with an article that was just so. What I did is I went to the top 10 that the Huffington Post just put out as current, and there's only one current living president who is counted as one of the wealthiest of all time. Do you know who that is?
I'm gonna say George W. Bush.
No, living president. William Jefferson Clinton.
He's made some pretty good coins since he got out, Ben.
Now has a net worth of $55 million. And he only ranks ninth on the list. John Kennedy, the 35th president, he ranked 10th on the list. FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, ranked 8th on the list. In 7th was Herbert Hoover. In 6th, Lyndon Johnson. And then you get into some real old guys. James Madison, he was 5th. Andrew Jackson was 4th. Theodore Roosevelt was 20th. He was 3rd. Then you got Thomas Jefferson 2nd. And, of course, the richest president ever, by today's dollars, was
George Washington.
Washington himself. So when we look at all of this in play, though, here's the question. You look at these top 10 richest presidents, and I'm willing to concede and throw out the first four, because they were of a different time and all of their money was real estate. I mean, you know, your farm lands and acres. But let's talk about it. When we talk about these top 10 richest presidents, what were their political affiliations?
Well, you have Democrats and Republicans.
But mainly Democrats.
But, a heap load of Democrats. I thought you were going to say, what did they do? What did some of the rich ones do? Like, well, they were bootleggers and heroin runners, damn it. If your name is Kennedy or Roosevelt, you were involved in bootlegging and heroin running.
You betcha, you know. And then you've got the others like George Washington and them, of course, you know, their value was in real estate, so. You know, I thought it was interesting. I had a lot of people talk to me about, you know, these rich presidents and everything else. So I looked up. The Huffington Post was there. Good source for that. You know, so I just wanted to put out those top 10 because I thought a lot of people might like that. We're going to be running out of time here in a few minutes. I'm actually going to shut the show down about 2 minutes early tonight. My apologies, but I don't want to get into the next story. It's going to take a long time, and we really don't have time for overtime tonight. So with that in mind, Mr. Martin, go ahead and give me your final thoughts.
Well, you know, final thoughts is from everything from talking to our richest presidents to, you know, everything from local politics and this, you know, I'm always going to end with the same thing. Stay cynical. Stay cynical. Don't buy into, you know, the crap. Don't buy into, you know, our own government. You know, think about things for a second and be critical. Our government, no doubt, is going to say that internationally speaking, no, we're not recruiting, we're not inciting, and, you know, everybody else in the world does that. So, as always, I just say stay cynical, whether it's local politics, whether it's state politics, you know, and the relative incompetence that you see, you know, if you see incompetence, get in touch with your inner cynic and come out and blast away at it. That's one of the things that I really enjoy about the political season now is, you know, the politicians, it's kind of like deer season. The politicians start coming out and they start poking their heads around the corner and they're looking. So they're going to be out and about meeting people, you know, once the sessions are over. And if you want to call them on some bullshit, they're out there. You know, they're publishing their schedules. They're probably not, you know, a lot of them I like, and they're probably not going to be real happy to hear me say that, but this is the election season is coming up, and if you've got an issue with somebody, you've got something you want to say, look up their schedules and go out there and meet them, you know, and tell your phone to click your iPhone over or whatever to video and say, this might get good. And get out there, be cynical, be cocky. They work for you.
Well, there you go. For me personally, you know, I feel the same way. You have to be cynical and you have to hold people accountable. I tell you, that's what we do at Louisville Politics. That's what we do right here at the AVM Radio Network. And that's what we'll continue doing until I just can't do it anymore, man. Somebody's got to stand up, and it starts with one person. So today, make sure you're that person and make a difference. Be a voice. That's how it starts. Let your voice be heard and bring other people in. Remember, at the end of the day, when you let your voice be heard, it's because my view matters. Say that to yourself. It's a difference. We'll talk to you, folks. Have a great week and for Ed. And then I'll be back tomorrow night with Dale of the Truth for our Wednesday night edition of the Springsteen Show.
Yep, they're gassing up the black helicopters for you guys now.
You can bet on it. Take care, Mr. Martin. We'll see you next week.
All right.
All right. Bye-bye.